Thanks for listening to the Alaska Works Podcast. I'm your host, Xavier Schley. I'm with Phil Elmer. And why don't you tell everybody what your current position is?
I am the aggregate manager for Exclusive Paving, which I am in charge of all their crushers, wash plants, and pits.
But you didn't start out in aggregates at all. How did you? What was your first job in construction?
It was actually sweeping the shop for H&H Contractors. And then the next year, I got into their precast yard.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a taste of working around concrete, and I just kind of took to it. So then after working in precast for 2 years, then I went and started driving mixer trucks. And I drove mixer trucks for, like, I think about 4 years, and then I started running the plants, all the concrete plants and so forth and so forth.
Yeah. And you went from mixer trucks to – when did you move into aggregates?
When there was, how many years ago?
Because you started out just working on crushers, right?
Yeah.
And wash plants and stuff.
Yeah. What happened was, big buyout. Everybody was getting moved around. And I want to say that was 8 years ago.
How old were you when you started at H&H?
I was 21, I think.
What were you doing before that?
Oh.
Just jobs.
Just jobs. Like, I worked at the Foot Locker, worked at Wendy's.
So you were just looking for a better job, basically.
Yeah. I
stumbled into the construction industry.
Yeah. And the pay, when I first started sweeping the shop, was a little bit better than working at fast food.
Yeah.
And then I just applied myself and did the job and kept moving up.
What was the jump in pay when you became a mixer truck driver? Because that was the first union job you got, right?
Yeah, that was my jump of pay at the time. I think it was, I want to say, almost $8 an hour.
And was that the first time you got insurance and benefits and all that stuff as well?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And started my retirement. Yeah.
Yeah. I went from making $8 an hour to a union mixer truck job, making $18 an hour. And, well, you know, I was working for you, but I showed up like I was stealing money. You know, like,
yeah.
$18 an hour, you know, like, it was all the money in the world to me at that point.
Yeah, your first week that you worked 50 hours or 60 hours and you saw that check and you're like, oh my gosh, I can do a lot with it.
Well, so, you know, in terms of training for your position, you've sort of been in training since you started in construction. Like, it's never been, you didn't start out with an apprenticeship program where you had to do 6,000 hours or whatever. You just started out and learned one thing and moved to something else and learned one thing and moved to something else until where you are now.
Yeah, and I'm still learning.
Yeah, well, that's kind of a huge advantage of an industry where there's always more you can do, always something else.
Yeah, you're only limited on how far you want to go and your training. If you're willing to get some extra classes in, going to school. And I'm not talking about college. I'm talking about go to a welding class, go to a mechanic class, go to an electrical class, and start picking up these classes and start learning and then applying it in the field. Then you will advance. And as you advance, you definitely get paid more money.
You know, when you're talking about that, now you're hiring people and you've got people working for you. They're all coming from the union, right?
Yeah.
I know you're getting apprentices or journeymen or...
Yeah, I was kind of there for a while. I wasn't hiring any apprentices because I have a small crew working for me. And last year, I was getting really tired of hiring journeymen that weren't quite cutting it, and they would quit or go somewhere else. And I thought, you know, I'm going to hire two apprentices this year.
Work them through your program.
And I took a big leap of faith. I hired one apprentice to do a major job on the crusher, and I got permission from the union to actually kind of interview apprentices because you're not really to – they don't want you to interview apprentices.
They want to send you a guy.
Yeah.
Because they've already interviewed them. They've already ranked them.
Yeah, but I was looking for a special guy for a special job to run the crusher, and I needed somebody who wanted to do the job, not here's your guy. Mm-hmm. So I found a kid. He actually turned out last year at the very end of summer, so he's a journeyman this year. Best move I ever did. And then I hired another apprentice, a first-year apprentice, to run a loader. Best move. Those two guys worked out better than the last several guys that I hired.
When you're hiring people who are journeymen, are you hiring people that already come with crushing experience or just journeyman operators?
Well, like last year, I had to let somebody go. He was a journeyman, and I started him off with pretty good pay, but he told me he could weld, fabricate, and run loader. Well, none of that was true.
Had welded, had fabricated, had run a loader, but might not be proficient at.
His welds were scary. His fabricating was not even close. And, you know, so when you tell someone you can do that job, make sure you can do that job. Mm-hmm. Don't fabricate your resume.
To get into the door.
Yeah. You know, most of these people are hiring, they just want somebody who's willing to learn. I mean, sometimes you need somebody that can actually do that job 100%. And, you know, but if you come in and say, yeah, I've done a little bit of it and that's where I want to go, a lot of them will give you a chance and train you. And they might not start you off as much money as you'd want, but a good employer will pay his employees and give them raises as we go.
Well, how much of success in the field, you know, working for you or working for your company is based on experience as opposed to consistently on time, consistently not having been out drinking the night before, a good attitude, you know, like it seems like those things will bring you a long way in the industry. If you have those three things,
yeah,
and you're kind of willing to figure stuff out or try to figure stuff out, you'll probably be successful.
Yeah, if you definitely show up on time, sober, want to learn, willing to work, and, you know, which is just a decent attitude, you know. You don't have to be happy every day, but just come in, do your job, and get along.
And what a lot of people don't really stop and think about is that how you are to deal with doesn't just affect you and the people on your crew. Like, you've got to interact with other crews. You've got to plan stuff around other people. And if you're easy to get along with, you know, that goes a long way in the industry.
Yeah. And you know, you don't have to give up your ethics either. You know, you come into this job and you find some people and want you to do something that is not right. Just tell them no. Even if you lose your job, it's better to lose your job and stay true to yourself than doing something illegal or unethical or against your morals.
I mean, in Alaska in general, because it's such a small state, right, your reputation eventually will get around. So, yeah, if you're a guy that's cutting corners and doing stuff that isn't legal, eventually people are going to know about that and they're not going to hire you.
Oh, yeah. And that's another thing is we all talk and we know the people who are safe, who are not safe, who you want to work for you, you know. And that's the thing is you get in this job and you go to work for somebody, it might not be the right fit. It doesn't mean anything. You just say, hey, you know, I'm going to try somebody else. You need to look for another job and you go do it, you know. But always try to give 100% while you're there, and so that if you leave, it's always on good terms and not on bad terms. So
for your job, you know, what's an average day? Is there such a thing?
Yeah, it's it depends on the season. We've kind of changed some things so we're not working 100 hours a week. We try to do better management, but we're still, if it's a busy year, we're looking at 6-12s. I always try to take one day off.
Mm-hmm.
And then that, most of the time that's in-town work. So if you're working 6-12s in-town, you got a good job. And some years it's 6-10s.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's 5-12s, and that's it. You know, it's just all depends on the work.
But that's the hours. But like, what about the what you're doing in a given day?
Oh, well, for me, I keep a small crew, and you know, I do my office stuff. But you know, but my crew, if they're on the crusher, they're crushing. I try to run the crusher 10 hours a day, so that means they're going to work 12 hours. And then
we should back up and tell them what crushing is, because, you know, you and I know, but
yeah, crushing is it's basically you're breaking rock from big rock to small rocks, and it goes across screens, and you're trying to do gradations to make spec material for certain projects. If you're making it for the asphalt plant, then you got the crush fines, which is usually like a 3/8 minus. fine material for them, and then you'll have your hot rock for them, which is 3/8 to 5/8, and then 5/8 up to 7/8. It all depends on what they're using. Then you make D1, which goes on the roads right before you pave. People put the D1 down and grade it out and compact it, and then they can put the asphalt on that.
What's the hardest part of your job?
Sometimes dealing with the paperwork that I got to deal with, but you know, if you would ask me that a couple years ago, I probably could have listed off of stuff, but I'm getting used to a lot of it, and a lot of it, when something's really new, it's hard. But once you start doing the job and learn to do it safely and stuff like that, it gets a little easier. There's days that it's physically demanding. If the crusher's breaking down and there's a lot of bad things going on and you're physically trying to fix it, you know, you're inside cutting, welding. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, when you get done, you feel like you've done something and you go home, you know. And
what's the hardest part of the job on your family, you think?
It's sometimes is the hours and not being able to be home on the weekends. That's why I always try to take Sunday off. But, you know, 15 years ago, I was working 7 days a week. And my oldest daughter, you know, I didn't get to take her fishing as much and stuff. And I think as she's older now, I see that, you know, I say, hey, you want to go fishing? And she absolutely doesn't want to do it anymore because she outgrew that spot. So I got to miss that.
Yeah.
With my oldest, and my youngest is totally different. So, you know, I get to spend more time with her. I go biking with her and stuff like that. So the hardest thing is, you know, if you get on some jobs and you're working a lot of hours and you miss your kids growing up, you know,
a part that isn't coming back, you miss a chunk of their development.
Yeah.
It's just there and gone, and then you don't get to do it.
And I've been pretty lucky. I got a really good wife and she's very supportive on what I do, and I'm supportive with her. And so it never really affected our relationship because we still had our time together. You know, if it was just go to the grocery store Sunday morning, mm-hmm. we've always had our time together. But kids, it's hard to you miss stuff sometimes when the kids are growing up.
What's your favorite part of the job? What's the best part of it, you think?
I think it's the rewards at the end of the season when you can kick back and say, man, we did a really good job this year, and I got a good group of guys working for me. And when things are going good, and I at the end of the year, I can take them to dinner and say, "Hey, you know, we did all this," and you know, and it's just a great feeling that when the job is done, you get to see what you did for the season.
Yeah, you can drive down a road and go, "I built this road," or "I was involved in the production of this," or.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get to see too much of the roads construction anymore since I'm in the pits and stuff. But, you know, when you drive onto your company's job and you just see all that fresh new asphalt and you know you made all that material because everything starts at the crusher. The quality control crushing is so important because if you get it right at the crusher, then it makes it easier for the hot plant to get it right. And then once the hot plant gets it right, it's easier for the guys out there laying the hot mix to get it right. And same as the wash plant, you get your material right for the batch plant to make the concrete. It all starts there. So if you do a good job and do your job well, it makes everybody else's job easier.
I think that's one of the things about the trades that a lot of people don't understand. You have a little part of a thing. But once you, even whatever it is, producing asphalt rock or building a building or whatever, you once your part's done and you walk away, someone else has to come in and build off of your part, and the better you do your job, the easier theirs are. I think that's why real skilled individuals in those positions makes the entire project better, you know. We talked about the most negative impact on your family, but what do you think the most positive thing on your life or your family life has been because you've had this career?
Probably the money, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been pretty lucky, fortunate. I've worked for some good people and I've been paid well, and but it's because I put a lot into it. And the nice thing is, you know, I can take my family to Hawaii. I can take them down to Florida and go to the amusement parks and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just different things that you can do. I took my family on a cruise and sent my oldest to Anchorage every weekend during the winter to go play volleyball. I mean, yeah. That was a lot of money, but it was something that we could afford, and we did it, and she enjoyed it, and she's going to remember that for the rest of her life. You know, it's so it gives us some opportunities to do things that if I didn't have this well-paying job, that I wouldn't be able to do.
You and I are about the same age. If you could, knowing what you know now, go back and give yourself at the beginning of your career one piece of advice or something you wished you would have known at the start, what would that be?
I would have probably took more classes, more training. It's learn different trades or different skills as soon as you can, you know. Because you take a welding class, doesn't make you a welder. But if you take a welding class at a young age and then you get the chance to practice it, that makes you a welder. You know, becoming a mechanic, you know, because you can turn a wrench, doesn't make you a mechanic. But if you learn the skills, then you become a better mechanic. But I think the one trade I probably would have done is I probably would have gotten to electrical and learned how to wire up these plants and all the control wires and stuff like that. Because if you know how to do that, you would have a job 24/7.
Yeah.
You know, it just it would be that I think in that part of this industry we're really hurting is qualified electricians that know how to work on the controls on crushers and wash plants and hot plants and batch plants.
Where do you see the industry going in the next 5 years or 10 years?
In Alaska, I see that we're going to probably the bases are going to start booming up here in Fairbanks starting this year. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I would say that the oil fields will probably start booming another 4 or 5 years. I think Alaska is going to grow, you know, and to make Alaska grow and become more energy efficient, we got to build. Mm-hmm. I mean, it starts from the ground up. And so wherever we go, you know, to make our state more energy efficient, we got to, if it's putting natural gas in everywhere, we got to build.
So if, you know, if somebody out there is a, whatever, 19, 20-year-old kid that's looking to get into the industry in an entry-level position in one of the trades, you know, being a guy who's hiring or has hired, whether you get it from the union or not, like, what are you looking for out of those kids?
I'm looking for somebody who's got a positive attitude, who is fairly smart, and I don't mean book smart. I'm talking who's got, you know, mechanical ability, mm-hmm. who just wants to come in and do the job and is willing to learn. I guess that's what I'm looking for is people don't want to come in and who can make it to work on time, really.
Yeah, and so anybody that's going to work for you is going to come out of the union. Do you guys ever hire people, say, kind of like you came out where you started out in one area of the company that isn't union, and you go, you know what, that's a guy that we think ought to get into the union and sort of recommend it to him and maybe help him get started or whatever?
Yeah, I've helped a couple people get in the unions that are working in our non-union section, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And when people come in their non-union and they're hard workers and they want to make themselves known and stuff like that, you kind of help them out and try to get them going and you see how they go. You know, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You know, we've hired a couple people through precast that turn out to be really good workers, and we've hired a couple that, you know, they didn't even make a season.
Is precast on union? I thought they were laborers.
No, they're actually talking about it again this year. Yeah, they didn't go union because with their benefits, they were going to take a cut in pay, and the people at first were like, I don't want to take a cut in pay, but they would have actually been making more money with their benefits and stuff like that. So,
well, that's all I have. You got anything? You'd be amazed the way we can edit this stuff together. I was talking to Ron Eckley when we got done, and I turned everything off, and he goes, oh, man, I got this story. I'm like, don't do that? You know, like, I've had so many people where, like, we're talking and then we get done and we turn everything off and they go, oh, you got to hear this story about this crazy thing. I'm like, I want the crazy thing.
When I first started on the crushing side and I was the just a supervisor, or just the foreman, not the supervisor. In two seasons, I fired, it was like 12 people over two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
10 of them was because of drugs. And two were because they couldn't do the job.
Yeah. So just by drugs, you mean the drug policy. They're showing up. They're not passing the drug test.
They're not passing.
Or did they show up
They're not passing the drug test. Yeah. And most of the time, it was serious drugs.
Oh, really?
It was like hardcore drugs. You know, we're talking cocaine, meth. You know, stuff like that. You know, just remember, you know, because marijuana is legal in Alaska, it doesn't mean it's okay on the job sites. Because if the company has a drug policy, you cannot smoke. And that's just the way it is. You know, you got to decide: do I want to make good money and have a decent life, or do I want to smoke and go work somewhere else? And I mean, that is your choice.
Yeah. Oh, here's another question I asked Ron. We didn't come up with anything except some stories about Mike Schultz. what's the weirdest thing you've ever seen on a construction site? You know, like whether it be someone wrecking or.
Oh man, I've seen some weird stuff, but I'm trying to remember. Yeah. You would have asked me that to think about before I came here. I probably would have remembered.
I should have. Well, you know, the thing is, this is my fourth or fifth, I think, you know. And as they go, I learn different questions. And I should put that one on one of the ones I sent out. Usually, I send those questions out to them before they come in.
Yeah.
I should add that to it.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen on a big old pour. Maybe you were there when this one happened. We're out on Isleson, and a beaver walked clear across the whole new concrete slab.
I didn't see that. That's awesome. Dragging his tail the whole way.
Yeah. And what do? You know, you just let that thing walk across and go fix what he just did. You know, but I've seen different things. You know, a lot of cool stuff. You know, we go be out. Sometimes we go out of town and crush and. There's some really cool stuff, you know, cool sceneries. And
that's something I miss, you know, like just the amount of places in the state I went to specifically for a job that I never would have went to, you know, especially out like in Delta and stuff like that, where it's the scenery's phenomenal. And that's just every day what you see going to work, you know?
Yeah. You know, you get up and sometimes the weather's crappy, but then there's days you get up and you can see the range, the mountain range, and, you know, and blue skies and, yeah, it's just phenomenal, and it just makes you happy that you live in Alaska on those days, you know, because it makes work enjoyable when you come and have nice weather.
Yeah, and that's another interesting thing about our job. So much of our state isn't developed that, you know, you get a little ways out of town, the job becomes much more remote than, say, 20 miles outside of, you know, Fargo. You know what I mean? Like, it's much more remote for us, so we get to see places that are way different.
Well, okay, I got a couple stories. We were crushing on the Denali Highway, and we're setting up the crusher, and this lady from China, she comes in the pit, can barely speak English, and she's pointing at her phone, and she's saying she has a flat tire, but she can't get cell phone reception. We're like, well, of course you can't get cell phone reception. You're on the Denali Highway. I says, well, where are you at? And she says, well, I'm like, she says like 3 kilometers up the road. So, you know, I'm like, okay, so we'll figure that out. So I'm like, well, just hop in my truck and I'll go up there and help you change your tire. And so I get up there and she was saying that her grandparents were up there and her child was. So I'm like, well, we definitely got to help her out.
You know?
I get there and her husband's there and her mom and dad are there and her daughter was there, and the car had a tire on on the back, so I changed the tire for them because none of them knew how to change a tire.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is kind of strange. I'm thinking, why is this man letting his wife
walk back there. And,
yeah. Where there's bears and stuff. So I changed the tire and sent her on her way. But I told them to go back the other way they came because they wanted to go to Valdez and we were close to Cantwell. I'm like, you have no more tires, so you need to go back. So I sent them back. And it was 3 days later. I'm driving down the road to where we're going to stockpile, and there's this German couple. And the guy can't change the tire because he isn't strong enough to lift the truck on the jack, and it was a rental. So I changed another tire. And then it was, I think it was like 5 days later, I helped someone change a bicycle tire on that road. It was just amazing that how many flat tires these people got and none of them repaired, except for the guy on the bicycle.
Well, or also, you're riding a bike that far into the middle of nowhere and you don't know how to change a bike tire, you know, like you think that would be prerequisite for that.
Well, he knew how to change a tire. He was just tired and I was just helping him out, you know, and he had to patch it.
Yeah.
So he had to patch it. And it was amazing to see how many bicycles were on that road. And they were all riding with those skinny tires. And I'm like,
which aren't built for that road.
No. You know? Yeah. And I thought that was kind of amusing that, you know, here these people are riding bikes and I don't know if they realize how many bears are on that road. I'm like, that's not something I would do without protection. Uh-huh. But
yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, we live in a world engineered for our safety. I mean, the roads have banked curves so we can go faster than we should on them, you know. And so we get a little ways outside of that and we can't really deal with the fact that no longer – is the world engineered to keep us safe,
yeah.
You know? And so we just kind of move along like it's the same.
Well, that's another thing is this industry is, and we're being mandated and pushed by the federal government and state government to be safer. And so safety is a big industry inside our industry. It is growing and growing. Well, and that's another place for people to go. If you don't really want to get your hands, let's say dirty, mm-hmm. go into the safety part of it and learn that.
Yeah, I need to interview one of those guys eventually, too. Well, and then when you were talking about hiring people, you might have a guy who knows everything in the world about his job. He might be fantastic. He might have been doing it for 20 years, but he might not be all that safe at it. And maybe he came from a company that's different than what you work for. And, you know, you just can't have those kind of mistakes. That's the part of the industry that I think probably has changed the most since the beginning of our careers till now. Is how much different safer it is, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is too, is because safety is a big part of our industry now. And when you bid on jobs, they look at your safety record. And if your safety record is lousy, you don't get that job even if you're the lowest bidder. So, all your equipment people, they're making their equipment, no matter if it's hand tools to big, construction equipment. They're making their equipment more friendly to the operators. So, you know, when I first started looking at the guys that were my age now, they were broken.
Yeah.
You know, the equipment wasn't fun to run, you know. It would tear you up. And
loud
now,
and no yeah, cages. And
yeah, now everything's air conditioning. The windows have to be closed. It keeps you out of the dust, you know, which is, you know, silica fume, you know. Silica mm-hmm. is a big hazard in our industry that people don't really realize, but there's ways to protect you from that, and that is windows closed, air conditioner, filters, watering, and stuff like that, even on the job sites, you know. That's why the water truck's there, not just for compaction, but it's to help keep the dust down.
Can you imagine if when we were in our, say, late 20s, if we'd have gone to George Horner, who owned our company, and said, you know, I really want a truck with air conditioning so that I can roll up the windows and be more comfortable in the summer. Can you imagine the reaction we would have received back then?
Yeah, and the difference between George Horner and his son Larry Horner, who basically took over, it was night and day, because George was like old school, you know, roll down the window, there's your air conditioning, and, you know, here's a bucket to sit on, you know. And George and Larry, you know, he like, man, that workman's comp costs a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Let's change out the seats in these trucks. You know, a seat's cheaper than a workman's comp claim.
Yeah.
You know, newer trucks with air conditioner, you know, so the guys have his windows up, you know, and the same thing too is when you're starting to get this new equipment, you know, these people are paying a lot of money for the equipment. So now they're getting really more antsy about you keeping that equipment clean. And, you know, and it's not hard. You know, I get all my guys, you bring garbage in that cab, you take the garbage out. You sweep that cab out once in a while. The mechanic does not need to come and clean your stuff up. Mm-hmm. That is not his job. His job is to fix what breaks on that thing and get it back up. And he doesn't need to move your five-day-old sandwich around. You know, you keep those cabs clean. And my guys are really good about that. You know, every day they take their garbage out. And
it's not the way it has always been, though.
No, yeah. There's still, you know, you get in some equipment and, you know, there's water bottles from last season still in it, you know, and it's like, you know, just pick up after yourself. It's not very hard. Your mama and your daddy don't work there.
Yeah, that's always been an interesting thing about our profession, that, like, I get paid too much to clean up after myself, you know?
Yeah, you know, you get paid. It's like I tell my boss, you tell me what needs to be done, and I will do it, as long as it isn't against the law. Or against my morals, I will do it. You know, I don't care. It's shoveling all day. I get paid well. You want to pay me to shovel? I will shovel.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just you got to have the right attitude, and you just think about it. Every week you get a paycheck, and you're paid to work. You know, so just do your job and try to actually do a little bit more than your job, and you'll go further in this industry, and you'll get paid more and more.
Yeah. Well, thanks, man.
Yep.
Thank you for listening to the Alaska Works Podcast, brought to you by a generous contribution from the Construction Industry Progress Fund and the Associated General Contractors of Alaska.